the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
John Gibbons is here for the last word on the environment. John, depending on your point of view, people are either enjoying or enduring the current hot weather. I think we're coming towards a heat wave here in Ireland. There's definitely heat waves in continental Europe. We had a report today from the European Union's Climate Change Service suggesting that it was the hottest June on record. And people are saying, yeah, look, we've had hot summers before. Lots of people remember 1995, if you go back further, 1976. And nobody was given out at that time about climate change and global warming. And yet we had those heat waves. So is this just not part of what we are?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. No, it's a very good point. I do remember both of those heat waves. I just about remember the 1976 heat wave. And yeah, it was celebrated really as an unofficial national holiday back in the 70s in Ireland. You know, fantastic weather. Everyone was delighted. It was, however, a regional event, quite a modest regional event. So we had hot weather in Ireland, Britain, across France, but it didn't extend globally. For example, the North America at that time, the Northern Hemisphere, it was only really a European phenomenon. Now, then you jump forward 20 years to 1995 for the next similar phenomenon. So both of those would come within the range of variability. In other words, every 20, 30, 50 years, you throw the climate dice and you're going to get a very hot summer for all kinds of reasons. Now, what we're seeing this time, Matt, is completely different. Two things. Number one, so far this summer, and remember, we're still in early July, so there's a lot of the summer ahead of us. So far this summer, we've had three European heat waves. So you've just talked about 1976 and 1995. So we've already this summer had 50% more heat waves in one summer than we achieved in the previous 50 years. Now, that's the difference. Not just that, Matt, but the maximum, two things, the maximum temperatures being recorded across Europe, including, of course, famously or infamously in Britain in 2022, where they breached 40 degrees centigrade. What we're seeing are much higher maximum temperatures now, breaching well into the 40s, and also, of course, more sustained. And we're getting waves of heat waves. We know about these things called heat domes, where the heat effectively becomes trapped and the pressure increases and it doesn't move on.
Sorry, that's essentially three things: that we're getting heat waves more often, that when they do happen, they last for longer, and also that the temperatures in those heat waves are considerably higher than they would have been in previous heat waves.
That's right. So Europe is currently, this summer, is running about 3.2 degrees above even the level up to about 2000. That is an incredible climatic shift. Now, that doesn't mean that it's stuck at this level indefinitely, but you and I have talked about it numerous times, Europe is the warmest heating, the fastest heating continent in the world, on average at the moment is already 2 degrees above pre-industrial. Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, the Northern Hemisphere is heating more. And the reason, of course, Matt, is that 70% of the Earth's surface is water. It takes vastly more energy to heat water. Now, most of the water in the world is in the Southern Hemisphere. So the land surface is largely in the Northern Hemisphere. You've got North America, you've got continental Europe, you've got Asia. So the great land masses are in the Northern Hemisphere. So they're heating faster. The second thing, of course, is Europe is quite close to the Arctic Circle. Now, the Arctic region is heating at four times the global average. So that is spilling over into Europe. And the reason, again, why we know that the Arctic is heating so fast is principally it's the so-called ice albedo effect, which in simple terms means that the Arctic Ocean, normally this vast curtain of white sea ice, reflects back about 90% of the incoming solar radiation, bounces it harmlessly back into space. What's happening, Matt, now increasingly is we're losing millions of square kilometres of sea ice during high summer. What that means is that instead of 90% of that energy being bounced out, about 90% of it is being absorbed into the Arctic Ocean, into the blue oceans. So that's why temperatures in the Arctic Ocean are rising so quickly. And Europe, again, we're quite close to the Arctic region. So that's the overall effect we're seeing.
Okay, there's a listener, and there's a couple of people have been in touch in recent weeks making this argument, saying that for whatever damage might be done by fossil fuels being burnt, the bigger damage that's been done is actually the impact of war. If you actually think of, if you're setting off bombs, if you're blowing up things on a regular basis, that has to be doing enormous. And that's something that's been happening on an increasing basis over the last 100 years that had never happened previously.
Well, we've had plenty of wars. There hasn't been a period where we haven't been at war. But I agree.
The types of war. I mean, it's a big difference between shooting cannons or going at each other with sticks and rifles, as might have happened in previous wars, to the giant bombs that are now used. And, you know, as listeners are saying, all of the things we're trying to do in relation to our plastic bottles and whatever to make our contribution or not take flights. You know, this is a separate argument to Ireland's too small. We can't do what the rest of the world's about. The people who are trying to do the right thing see it a multiple of the damage been done by things like wars.
I totally agree. War is destructive on so many levels. We also know, for example, that the single biggest institutional greenhouse gas emitter in the world is the US military. Now, because of the US's ability to exempt itself from regulation, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel, doesn't tally emissions from the military. So they go into...
Can you imagine what emissions have been caused by the bombing in Iran?
Oh, they have. I mean, they've been tallied. And of course, we've seen similarly the Gaza conflict, the emissions involved are substantial. But I will say this, Matt, and I'm not in any way trying to downplay these catastrophic wars, but relative to the emission globally of 40 to 50,000 million tons of fossil fuels annually, the impact of war, yes, it makes it worse, but the overwhelming impact remains fossil fuel burning and methane release. We know this, we've measured it, and yes, we will make it worse by doing things like war. But war by itself is just adding, it's adding to our woes, but in no way is it does it compete with the colossal everyday damage of burning 100 million barrels, Matt, a day of fossil fuels.
Yeah, I think it's just logical that that has to cause damage.
You're absolutely right. It has a role, but it has been quantified and it's still in low single digits.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about worker protection in times of high heat.
Yeah, well, first of all, I suppose following on from what we just talked about, these high temperatures, these extremely high temperatures across Europe and elsewhere, they're causing increasing stress for people who have to work outdoors, whether it's in construction, whether it's postal workers, farm workers are particularly vulnerable. So there's efforts underway now among unions across Europe to try to get political agreement from management that when you hit certain temperature thresholds, which can be a combination of heat and humidity, which are dangerous to human health. So, for example, above 30 degrees centigrade, you probably shouldn't be working outdoors in jobs that have physical exertion. And they say that if it's a very physically stressful job, that threshold should be at about 27 degrees. Now, there is quite a good political support for this matter in Europe, but we see again the parties of the right opposing this, probably, I assume, because they don't tend to see their interest reflected in the well-being of workers. But it is the case. And we know, for example, that so far the June heatwave is estimated in Europe to have led to 20,000 excess deaths in Europe.
Yeah, but you know, there's also a significant argument that it's the cold that kills people far more than heat. That the numbers who die because of cold is far greater.
That is an interesting argument, but I think it's on fairly shaky grounds, right?
Why?
Because what we're seeing with the heat is the potential for heat to become a global mass fatality vector is enormous. Yes, there are problems with cold-related deaths, but cold-related deaths, Matt, of course, are declining because, for example, the number of frost days we get, say, across North America, you know, when they get a big freeze in, you know, somewhere like Pittsburgh, it's all over the news. And then somebody points out that actually, you know, you used to have 50 of these days a year. Now you've got one or two. So what's rare is newsworthy. So overall, cold-related deaths worldwide are way down. Heat-related deaths are rising, but there's no limit, Matt, to the number of people who can die in heat-related events.
Listener says it's 35 degrees in Australia before the outdoor workers get sent home.
Yeah, that's very, very high temperatures.
That's very high.
It is. Now, part of that, of course,
I mean, we're at the moment, we're about 25 to 27.
That's
we're talking
right.
about 10 degrees warmer.
Yeah, and a lot of people here in Ireland are already gasping with this. By the way, Matt, just I thought an interesting little cameo from the Financial Times today that I'd like to share with your listeners. Eurostar, you know, the train company,
yeah.
They've put in an order for a new generation of trains. But one of the key specification requirements for their trains is that they have to be able to cope with temperatures up to 55 degrees for what they call Saudi summer conditions that Eurostar are expecting in Europe over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Because when you buy a new train fleet, you're buying, they will be in use until mid-century. So that should give, again, people some idea of the kind of inferno that we're facing into when companies like this have to specify trains capable of withstanding 55 degrees centigrade. And the problem, of course, is how are we going to withstand 55 degrees centigrade? Countries like France, which would have always had a mixed and temperate climate, it was warm in the south, it was mixed in the middle, and quite wet and damp in the north. We're now seeing massive heat problems, and probably as this continues, we're going to be seeing the abandonment even of parts of European countries, which if you and I were having this conversation, Matt, 5 years ago, as I think we were, I don't think you'd have believed me if I said that parts of Europe are going to be too hot for human habitation and certainly too hot for crops.
Just to finish, interesting story from New Zealand, which I think is always regarded as a pretty progressive country, quite similar in some respects in its climate to Ireland, albeit has a lot more mountains and all the rest of it. But tell us about its move to ban climate change litigation.
Yeah, of course, the political, I think since Elizabeth Ardern left as Prime Minister, I think the politics has swung to the right in New Zealand.
Jacinta Ardern.
I beg your pardon. Jacinta Ardern. That's what happens, Matt. You leave and you get forgotten about. Jacinta Ardern, yeah. After she left politics, basically, the New Zealand government has swung to the right. I guess they have similar problems to ourselves as a huge defence, particularly in New Zealand, of their livestock sector. And that, again, has a big effect on politics. But this particular development is extremely worrying, where essentially the New Zealand government are bringing forward a bill that will make it impossible for citizens to take litigation against companies who they say are responsible or driving climate change. And what the government, they're not just trying to firewall companies from their climate responsibilities, but they're also firewalling themselves, Matt. And they're basically saying you cannot take the New Zealand government to court for its negligence in relation to climate change. So unfortunately, it continues a trend that we've seen in the US and elsewhere. For example, right now, 5 US states have legislation in place that block individuals' rights to take climate action. And unfortunately, it's a trend that is only going to continue.
Okay, thank you very much for that, John Gibbons. And we'll see you again next Thursday for the last word on the environment.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.